The following candidate forum was recorded on the evening of Monday, October 30th, 2023, at the Bozeman Public Library.
Welcome, everyone, to the Bozeman Public Library. My name is Beth Boyson. I'm one of the adult services librarians here at the library. Thank you for attending this candidate forum. The forum is for information only and does not endorse or promote any vote for or against candidates on the upcoming ballot. This meeting is being recorded by KGBM 95.9 Gallatin Valley Community Radio and will be available to listen to as a podcast on their website. Ballots for the election have been mailed out on Friday, October 20th and can be returned by mail or in person from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday to Bozeman City Hall or the County Election Office in Bozeman. Ballots are due and must be received by 8 p.m. on Tuesday, November 7th. A special thanks to our forum sponsors, Bozeman League of Women Voters, the American Association of University Women, Bozeman Professional Women, Bozeman Public Library, and the Belgrade Community Library Foundation. I'd like to remind everybody to please shut off your cell phone. I just shut mine off. And I want to introduce our moderator, Sally Mason. She's from the League of Women Voters. And maybe we could give a round of applause.
Hello, everyone. My name is Sally Mason. I'm with the League of Women Voters, and I'm very glad to see all of you here today. There are a couple chairs in the front if you guys want to come up. This is a huge crowd, and I'm very glad to see Bozeman citizens interested in this election. So, yeah. We have two sets of candidates to hear from tonight. Three are running for mayor, these three, and these two are running for the commission. And as I say your name, please wave so everyone knows who you are. Cindy Andrus, John Meyer, Joey Morrison. Those are the mayoral candidates. And Roger Blank and Jennifer Magic for commission. The format is as follows, okay? Each candidate, and they know this, has 2 minutes to introduce themselves and explain their qualifications and why they would like to be elected. And then each candidate will have 2 minutes to answer one question, but we'll get to that after a while. Who wants to go first? Go for it.
My name is John Meyer. I'm running for mayor of Bozeman to make our town the most sustainable on the planet. I have twin boys named Rex and Wiley. They just turned 4 last month. I want them to grow up in a good town. I'm the first person in my family to graduate from a 4-year college. Yo gradué de la Universidad de Montana con un título en español y biología también. In 2003, I received a degree in biology and Spanish from the University of Montana in 2003. While at the University of Montana, I started a community organization. We got students together, we got faculty, staff together, and we got the University of Montana to cut its contract with Russell Athletic Wear. The Grizzly apparel was being made in sweatshops, and we said that's not okay, and the school decided to cut that contract. You guys hear me okay? After organizing, I went to work for the U.S. Forest Service in Montana and Alaska as a federal biologist. After that, I went to law school, graduated with honors, came back to Bozeman, started a nonprofit law firm. We're dedicated to protecting the people, the forests, the water, and the wildlife of the American West. We've had huge success in the last year and a half. I've beaten the Attorney General in the Montana Supreme Court in 2 cases regarding ballot initiatives so that voters can bring constitutional initiatives. What else should we talk about? That's what I have to bring to the next mayor seat. Thank you.
I'm going to ask you to hold your applause, if you would, till the very end of the whole thing, if that's okay with you. Who wants to be next?
Thanks so much to the League of Women Voters and for all of you for turning out tonight. This is a great turnout. So many of you may know that I have background in planning. I'm a community planner. I have a master's degree. I've been on the Bozeman City Commission for the past 3 years. And as a community planner, you might ask, you know, what do they do? It's kind of an obscure sort of job. So I thought I'd share a couple of things that I've done working as a planner for the past couple of decades. I use the statute that John Meyer talks about a lot, the moratorium statute, to help stop coal bed methane development on Bozeman Pass. I worked in Gallatin County in part with Jane Jelensky when she was a county commissioner to stop dozens of subdivisions, inappropriate subdivisions in the county, basically sprawl in the hinterlands. I worked to stop gold mines in Park County and with the help of Senator John Tester. I've worked in the communities of Livingston, Gardner, White Sulphur Springs to help these communities establish foundational planning documents so they can be stronger for the future. I am committed as your Bozeman City Commissioner to working with all of you to develop a UDC we can all be proud of. I'm committed as a Bozeman City Commissioner to protecting our natural environment with things like an urban tree ordinance. I'm committed to adding appropriate housing so people in our city don't have to live on our streets. I believe I'm the right candidate for the job. Thank you so very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Jennifer. Next.
Hi, good evening, y'all. My name is Roger Blank. First, I'd like to thank the League of Women Voters and all of you for coming out this evening at this forum. My background is before I relocated to Bozeman, I was a prosecutor back east, and I also worked for the New York City Police Department as a special prosecutor, where I prosecuted police officials for official corruption and misconduct. Since I've been here, I've noticed a change in the Bozeman that I moved to, that I loved, which is why I chose to move here, and that I still love and want to maintain. I've noticed a failure of the current administration to be responsive to the needs of the citizens. Initially, it was not like that when I relocated here, but I have noticed that in the last couple of years, and that's why I elected to run. And an example of this could be the city's response to the urban camper issue. I know it's a divisive issue. I know it's a significant issue. The city's letting it fester and then inadequate response. Additionally, the city's handling of the UDC code. The UDC code is going to be our map going forward. And the city essentially dropped the ball. The UDC should represent the community values of Bozeman. And currently it does not. So I'm running to see that the UDC, which is our future plan, represents all of our values. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Use that one. Ooh, there we go. That feels right.
Love to see a full house in our fifth forum. I like to get just a picture of who's in the room. And I hope Sally will indulge us for a moment. Just by a show of hands, who here is concerned about the direction that Bozeman is going? Yeah.
Nobody.
Let's do by a quick clap. Who feels like they have the energy and the ambition and the hope that we can get a Bozeman where we all belong and the one that we deserve and that we need? I'm glad to know that I'm in the right place. My name is Joy Morrison. I'm running for mayor. I've spent most of my career in this community as a social worker, working for places like HRDC and Haven and the Help Center, talking with some of our neighbors in crisis, serving some of our neighbors in some of their most vulnerable times in their life. And I am running for mayor because Bozeman is in crisis in no dissimilar way to how I responded to our neighbors in crisis as a social worker. I describe myself as a chronically aspirational person. But I also describe myself as fiercely pragmatic. I cannot waste my time on solutions that are impractical or impossible or unethical. That's a waste of my time. It's a waste of my generation's time that has inherited problems beyond our imagining, locally, nationally, and internationally. I am bringing that pragmatism, and that pragmatism has paid off for me in this election. I have run the biggest campaign in Bozeman municipal history, and I'm proud to say that. We have incorporated over 100 unique volunteers, knocked over 12,000 doors, raised more money than everybody up here combined, which are things that they often say young working class candidates can't do. They say you can't get big endorsements. I'm endorsed by former mayors Carson Taylor and Steve Kirchhoff. I've secured the endorsement of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Montana, and I will bring that same energy and pragmatism to the office of mayor because that, to me, is what we deserve, and that is what the voters deserve. Thank you.
Okay.
It was that one time.
Okay, Cindy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cindy Andrus. I'm your current mayor. I've been serving on the city commission for 13 years. And what I bring with me with that 13 years of experience are three different things, I think. First of all, I have had an opportunity to build relationships with mayors across the state and across the country. I have built relationships with our state delegation, with our federal delegation. I have a great working relationship with the county, probably the best working relationship the city has had with the county in the last 13 years. I have also built relationships with Montana State University, with HRDC, and with so many other businesses and nonprofits in our community. Why does that matter? Because if we're going to solve the problems going forward, we need to be able to work with others to partner and collaborate in order for us to solve the challenges that are facing us. Second thing, I understand the complex issues that are facing our community, but I also understand the small details that it takes to really move our community forward. A lot of the big issues garner a lot of the public attention, but we spend so much of our time actually working on small things like making sure our garbage is picked up and our water is clean, and that when you turn it on, water actually comes out. I also understand how government works. We have a commission manager form of government. We have a charter with self-governing powers. Those things matter. The commission sets policy. The city manager implements that policy. And we work as a team. I don't have any more power on the commission than any other commissioners. In 30 seconds, I will tell you that I want to continue working to protect the things that make Bozeman, Bozeman. How and where we grow, and preserving the land and the beauty that surrounds us. Maintaining our small town charm while we balance density and infill, and we balance affordable housing with new development while saving our historic neighborhoods. Sustaining our sense of community, working together, coming together to build a community we all want to live in. Thank you.
Okay. The one thing I didn't mention was you'll see two people up here, the woman in the purple sweater and her husband sitting beside her. They are the timers, and they will make sure people meet the time commitments.
You're doing great, by the way.
Yeah. So we have asked the candidates to prepare the following question. We gave this to them weeks ago. What are your three top priorities to achieve during your term? And since they're all going to be on the city commission, we gave them all the same question. So who would like to be first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
So this is an interesting question. It's one that we haven't received in the past, because in the past it's like, what are the priorities you want to accomplish? Well, this is about what do you want to achieve in your term. So what I want to achieve, the first thing I want to achieve, is our housing goals. Our assessment, our last housing assessment called for 5,000 to 6,000 units of housing by 2025. I want to make sure that we achieve that, but I really want to focus on affordable housing. And I want to do this by maintaining the tools that we have. We don't have that many tools for affordable housing. I want to make sure that we continue to have those tools. Being able to use TIF dollars, for example, for affordable housing. Being able to work with developers on development agreements to attain affordable housing. LIHTC, low-income housing tax credits, another thing that's really important and has garnered a lot of affordable housing. But I also want to work on a couple of new ideas. This idea of a public housing authority is interesting to me. I think it's something that we should be exploring and at least thinking about. I also think that there's this idea floating around right now. Some people have been talking about it as a way to develop a lot of units in our community without a developer. And that's a really interesting idea to me, and I want to continue to look at that. I want to continue to reach our climate goals. We have a very aggressive climate plan, and I want to make sure that we are reaching those goals. Particularly, I would like to encourage the use of our planned development zone, because that planned development zone incentivizes folks to reduce their water consumption by 25%, to reduce their average motorized trips, and I hope that more developers in the community use that. I also want to work on our outreach. I want to work on better communication from the City Commission with the community. We seem pretty fractured and frustrated, and I think we have some work to do there, and I want to make sure that we're working on that together as we go forward in the next few years. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Next.
As the next mayor of Bozeman, I have three top priorities: ensuring that our residents have adequate drinking water, affordable housing, and we also need to ensure that we scrap the UDC revisions. In terms of water availability, the Bozeman Daily Chronicle issued an article yesterday saying we're facing water shortages potentially by 2027. So I don't think that we should continue to build vacation houses if we can't ensure that we have adequate water for the current residents right now. The city has this thing called cash in lieu. A developer wants to build a vacation house, but they don't have water rights. They pay the city a bunch of money. And the thing is that we can't drink money. We have to stop this process. In this past commission meeting, the city said, yeah, that's true, we have to stop it. And it says, now we're just going to let the developers pay money to have some sort of modified offset where you make the sprinkler system more efficient. And that doesn't change the fact that we're running out of water. We can't let developers take all of our water. We need to ensure that we have adequate drinking water ourselves right now. Affordable housing. Right now, I hear a lot of times people say, well, the legislature's tied our hands. And that is not true. We can stand up to the legislature and say, what you've done is cause an affordable housing crisis. And because of that, we can't require new affordable housing. And because of that, you're damaging the health, safety, and welfare of our community. So we are not going to approve any more vacation houses. And when you say that, all of a sudden you have the legislature's attention. And they're going to come to the table and they're going to say, okay, what do you need to build affordable housing? And that's one thing that we can do, is put a pause on vacation houses. Last thing, scrapping UDC provisions. They do not require any affordable housing. They were proposed, planned by some out-of-state consulting firm that the city paid $435,000 to. It wasn't built by the community. There's no community buy-in. We need to scrap the whole UDC provision.
Yeah. Focusing back on pragmatism, I really want to think back to what I think is actually possible for me to do in 4 years, in just one term. Housing is going to be a long fight. It is not a one-term issue. And of course, like Housing Authority, LIHTC, land banking, things like that are really important. But my three biggest priorities that I think I can tackle, some of these I hope in the first 2 years. The first is boosting up and emboldening our climate action plan. I have a 5-point plan up on my website that I've talked about in previous forums. I want to hit on just a few pieces. One is securing EPA money. There is EPA money that is going to cities comparable to ours all across the country that's just leaving money on the table for us to pay for some really big and ambitious projects like solar gardens and rebates for solar panels and other forms of efficiency. This is really big. The second is going to be, because of my background as a social worker, I've spent most of my career working with people experiencing homelessness. I want to make sure that by the time I leave 4 years from now, urban camping and homelessness is rare and it's brief. That we have the resources needed and we have the infrastructure in place to be able to manage these things humanely, quickly, and responsibly. And I think I'm the only one up here with the expertise and the background, the system understanding to get us there. But the third piece, and this is what I would start in January, is rebuilding the trust between the community and City Hall. I suspect that's a big reason why a lot of people are here tonight, why a lot of people felt blindsided by the UDC, why a lot of people felt blindsided by downtown parking or by the homelessness ordinance. That is going to hold us back from being able to tackle some of the most ambitious and biggest problems that are facing our community. If we have to continue finger-pointing as to who is a true Montanan, who's a true Bozemanite, who belongs in the commission and who doesn't, who's a homeowner and who's a renter, it is just going to hold us back from being able to solve the biggest problems facing us today.
I really want you to ask you to not applaud or boo or any of that stuff. There's too many of us and there's too little time, and you need to hear from the candidates. So, please.
My first priority, which, should I be fortunate enough to be elected, will last every single day of my 4-year term and every day thereafter, should you desire that I repeat another term, is to represent you, to be your voice on the commission. Because right now, if you feel like I feel, we don't have a voice on the commission, and we are entitled to a voice on the commission because we are all residents of Bozeman. We all live here. This is the place we love. We want to preserve it. Now, in that preservation would be a UDC that is representative of Bozeman's values, the citizens of Bozeman's values. And part of that is respect for the current physical layout of the city. Single family, being in a single family home neighborhood, is there's no shame in being a single family homeowner. You should not have a multi-unit development going up next to you. You bought into a single family home to preserve the neighborhood that you wanted, to live in the type of neighborhood you wanted. And now you're being condemned or being punished for it? No. Multi-unit developments are appropriate where they are already developed, and they should continue to be developed in that area. So I would say, number one is UDC representative of all of our values and representative of the private property rights of those who have private property, and those who are in multi-unit dwellings can be in multi-unit dwellings areas. Now, in areas that are then picked for future development, I would say that they can have multi-unit and single-family homes because that's what people are buying into. The other thing I would go for is to manage the growth that Bozeman is going under. And as we manage that growth, we have to keep the outside investment class from coming in here and sucking out of our community rather than contribute to it. And last, I'll be quick, is water and environmental preservation. We need more than just saving water. We need to capture more water. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, top three goals: conservation, housing, and community. And when I talk about conservation, I'm talking about the natural environment, and I think we would all agree we want to protect our rivers, our air quality, our water, our creeks, streams, wildlife, pollinators, whatever it happens to be. But I also am talking about conservation of our built environment, our history, our character, our existing neighborhoods. So conservation is super important, and really important that we have plans, which we do have. We have climate action plan. We have the growth policy. We have something coming up called the sensitive lands plan. Having these plans and making sure they become regulations so they have teeth. We need an urban tree ordinance, so we have a document out there that has teeth to protect our urban forest. Housing, there's been a lot of talk about it. Housing, I agree with it all. We've got to look at all options to increase our housing stock. I really liked Joey's comment that urban camping should be rare and brief. We need to work ourselves out of this problem. We need to work on it together as a community. And we need all different types of housing, including public housing, looking at public housing as an option. Lastly, to talk about community, I think as evidenced by the turnout tonight, we have a community who cares. We have people who want to participate in the process. We have seen that participation at community meetings. We need more of it. We need help moving forward because our issues are big, and we need your help.
Thank you. And now we're going to open it to questions from you. And people came to hear the candidates, not me and not you. So would you please make your question brief, and I will stop you if you want to make a speech. And everybody gets, just a sec, everybody gets 1 minute to answer the question. If it's a yes-no question, you still get a minute to say, you're not limited to the yes-no. You get to flesh it out, whatever the answer is. So, who would like to be first? I think the gentleman in the very back in the blue jacket.
18 years ago, Dr. Schmidt and I, who was the head of the Earth Science Department at MSU, we went, because of my background in hydrogeology, to the county commissioners and the city planners, and we talked about water conservation.
Sir, what's your question?
And my question is, they didn't want to do anything. The realtors came out. I want to see some action, and I'd like to know what all of you are planning to do to make sure that we have enough water, because we don't.
Okay.
We're in an arid environment, basically a desert, high desert environment, and we really got to think this through.
Sir, we understand the question. Thank you. Who would like to be first?
I'll go first.
1 minute, everybody.
Sir, you're absolutely right. This is a high desert environment. Preserving water is not enough. Now, certainly that will help. We need to insist that all new developments have water-saving appliances, water-saving plumbing, all of that. But that is ultimately not enough. We need to look future forward to capture resources. We don't want to be like California. California went 43 years without building a reservoir. And when they got all the rains this past year, 100 years of agricultural water went out to the sea. We don't want to be that. We want and we need to develop capture sources beyond just saving water. We also need in the UDC to limit ground coverage. We need natural vegetation on our properties, not green lawns that take up a lot of water. So we have to, it's a multi-faceted attack, but it does have to be addressed. Thank you.
Okay. Who wants to be next?
Okay.
So, yes, we live in a semi-arid climate. We only get 16 to 19 inches maybe a year. And it is amazing to look at a water chart and our water usage throughout the year to see how it spikes in August and September because we are watering our lawns. It's okay to perhaps water our gardens, but to water lawns takes a tremendous amount of water. At last Tuesday's commission meeting, we looked at and studied and passed a comprehensive water plan. This is exactly what we need to do. We need to help educate people about those top years, and we need to conserve as much as we can throughout the year. I grew up in California. I know what it's like to live through drought times, and I think we need to consider all times as drought times here.
Thanks, Jennifer.
If we want to save water, we should stop building vacation houses. They're unnecessary. They're a waste of water. Next, we need to say any new development, no grass. If you already have a house, we want to encourage you to transition away from grass to a drought-tolerant shrubbery. The city can update its local, we can have local improvement projects in Mystic Lake to increase the capacity of water storage. These are small things that we can do, but I think all together it adds up to ensure that we have adequate water for ourselves right now.
Thanks. So the city has an integrated water resource plan. We did that plan in, I believe it was 2016, looks out 50 years to water. We have water. We just don't have free water. We have water. We are continuing to try to buy water rights when they become available. They're $6,000 an acre foot. So it's expensive. But we have water rights when they come available. That's why we need cash in lieu. And just a point of clarification, if you don't have cash in lieu, then when you have a big development that may include affordable housing and you don't have cash in lieu, and that if that development comes with cash in lieu, you're not going to have the affordable housing either. I think it's interesting to note that between 2008 and 2022, our water consumption went down by 30% while our population doubled. So, and that was due to water conservation. Water conservation is a low-hanging fruit. We need to continue working to implement the water conservation plan that we just passed last week, and saving water that way will help us with our water goals. Thank you.
Joe?
Yeah, water gives me a lot of anxiety. As a young person, it does feel like it's this inherited problem that we're going to have to just figure out at some point. To me, the biggest priority that I have is to deepen our relationships with our other cities in the valley and with our county to make sure that we can get an actual answer to how many people can live in this valley. With the amount of water that we have, based on the growth rate that we see, and based on the density with which we are building, how many people can actually live here? And then from there, actually incorporate that into every single plan that we're building. Every single time a development comes through, that is in the back of our mind. How much water can actually sustain this many people living in this valley? some of the things around water conservation are no-brainers that are absolutely low-hanging fruit. Water conservation is essential. It should be harder to put green grass lawns in place than drought-resistant lawns. That should be an easier thing than it is right now. We absolutely need to get away from and discourage the creation of green grass monoculture vegetative cover.
Another question. Yes, sir.
Back to housing, the question. Some folks have said we will not be able to actually have affordable and middle-income homes for our children, our workers, and families if we don't build more, a mix of single-family and multifamily. And then other folks have said if we build even those right now in the current environment, they won't be priced at a point that our folks can afford them anyway. Both those answers are correct. So if that is true and a land bank or a housing fund is the only way forward, what would be your plan to be able to get that done?
Thank you. Well, good luck.
Thank you, sir. I think we need innovative ideas. And an example of an innovative idea that I would propose is that you're a homeowner. You want to build an ADU, an accessory unit. Now, you can either be, and the plan can work one of two ways. You can be offered a low-interest loan from the city, or you can be offered a grant outright, but on condition that the unit have deed restrictions, that it be rented to an employee here in Bozeman, and that it be rented at a below-market affordable rate for X number of years. So let's say you're given a grant, $50,000, you build this ADU. It goes with a deed restriction. You have to rent it to an employee of Bozeman for the next 10 years, and it has to be at an affordable rate. And then after that, the homeowner can charge a market rate for the ADU and reap the benefits on a market level. And that will increase capacity quickly, especially if we have, let's say, plans, 10 approved plans. A homeowner goes to City Hall, and there are 10 approved plans, and they have it built expeditiously. Okay. Thank you.
Next.
I could take that one.
Okay.
Some of the best housing that's the cheapest and the quickest for us to build is in housing that already exists today. In my knocking doors, I talk to a lot of folks that are empty nesters who say, I would love to rent out the loft, the second floor of my house. My kids aren't there anymore, but it's impossible in my zoning area. It's impossible because of cost. It's impossible for XYZ thing. ADUs and internally subdividing existing structures are some of the cheapest and the fastest and most invisible ways for us to build housing that doesn't actually modify the character of a neighborhood. It preserves that character, but lets us build more units. But as for land banking is some of the most exciting future housing. It's a longer-term vision that we need to focus on that I think needs to be a partnership with our private partners in this community. We have a lot of wealthy folks that can help us get over the finish line. We need to make sure that we can build real relationships and public-private partnerships to encourage investment in this community to say, let's get a land bank, let's take a developer out of the equation, let's take the cost of land out of the equation, and put us back in charge.
Thanks. I agree with Mr. Morrison, particularly around the idea of being able to do something inside of homes that already exist. It's difficult to do that now because of our regulations, but I think there are possibilities for us to work toward a better future with being able to do some of those building within your home and actually allowing the neighbors and the people in that little community to make improvements in their home to be able to have more like ADUs and apartments, etc. I also think that this housing fund, we have more money in our housing fund right now than we have over the last, I don't know how many years. We have almost $2.5 million in there. We need to continue to put money in that housing fund so that we can use it toward efforts around community housing. And land banking, as Mr. Morrison said, I think the idea of working with our partners is a good one. It's a lot easier said than done, but we have a lot of partners in our community, particularly large employers that are interested in working on this idea with us, and I think we should continue working on that idea of land banking as well. Thanks.
If you own a home right now, you can put an ADU in there. It's not cost-effective. And that's one thing that I think the city can do and should do is offer tax incentives, rebates for people who want to build ADUs behind their homes. I think this will open up a bunch of housing for people. The cost of affordable housing is mainly prohibited by the cost of land because Bozeman is very expensive, the land itself. And so Bozeman itself owns land. We should be leveraging that land that we own. We have 26 acres adjacent to the Museum of the Rockies. We create a public-private partnership, and we say we are going to work with a private developer. We'll give you part of that, and in exchange, you're going to build some affordable housing. We can latch on to that, the idea of public housing. The Gallatin County commissioners are talking about public housing as well. And so when you get public housing and the affordable housing with the public-private partnership, all of a sudden you can have the doctor living next to the baker, living next to the mechanic, living next to the lawyer, and that's true community. That's what I'd like to see in Bozeman.
Thank you, John. Pass the mic.
So a couple important concepts mentioned by my fellow candidates here, innovation and incentives. And I think our community has really stepped up in terms of coming up with pretty creative ideas, and we need to keep that going. One creative idea, speaking of land banking and a housing trust, we have a housing trust here, the Headwaters Housing Trust, that has helped develop Bridgerview development. So the idea that a trust actually owns the land underneath, and a homeowner can own just the home. So you take away the cost of the land, which in so many cases is the expensive piece. So let's keep looking at options like that, whether it's housing trust, land banks, incentives to come up with an ADU package. I've been working to put together a package. We do allow ADUs, but we need to incentivize them more.
Question? Yes, ma'am.
In the last round of comments, a lot of you referred to ADUs or converting a house into some apartments without having to change the structural integrity of the neighborhood. How does that affect parking in a small neighborhood? I know parking is a problem downtown and in the neighborhoods. So as you add an ADU, you're adding two or three more cars.
The question was, if you build an ADU, then what happens with parking and the cars, and how does that happen? So, hold on.
Yeah, thank you. It's an important piece for us to be able to measure. I mean, and I think especially the university district is feeling this already, right? With folks cramming into houses because it can only be, a four-bedroom house is only affordable if you can get eight people in it, eight people with separate cars. Suddenly you can't park on your own street. You're parking two streets down. The problem gets worse and worse and worse. We need to make sure that when we are creating new infrastructure, new housing, we are accompanying that with public transportation. We are creating incentives for folks to share cars rather than own separate cars. I certainly would like to see a Bozeman where we effectively don't need our private vehicles to get to our jobs, to get to groceries, to get to downtown. And our private vehicles are for exploring and for adventuring. It's for getting out into the outdoors. One of the only ways that we can really effectively take cars off the road is by improving and expanding our public transportation infrastructure. That is one of the only ways that cities have been able to just effectively delete cars off of the road, remove auto dependence. As long as we're creating auto dependence, yeah, we're going to see parking be a problem, especially in our residential neighborhoods.
But you still have a car.
Wait. Next.
You might still have a car, but if there's public transportation, you don't have to drive it every day. You can park it a few blocks down, a half mile down. I understand it's a problem, but we do need to get cars off the road. You hear climate change all the time. If we want to address climate change, we get cars off the road, right? How are we going to get cars off the road if we provide public transportation? How are we going to provide public transportation right now? I think that we should put a pause on approving luxury, unnecessary vacation houses, and have the city focus its resources on building good public infrastructure. Right now, the city focuses all the time about trying to mitigate bad development. We need to free up those resources and say, hey, we're going to build good public transportation infrastructure.
Okay. Who would like to be next?
So the way that I think about this is that those additional structures that you would build in your house or an ADU would be small, and they're not going to be able to accommodate a lot of people. So you may have one additional car, you might have two, but you're not going to have a lot. And just so you know, the legislature just passed a law that was enacted in October that allows duplexes
in any zone now, and they didn't happen to think about where those cars were going to park. So again, I think we need to be working with our legislatures as we talk about affordable housing so that we don't have more bills like that that are created and they're not thinking about where people park. They're only thinking about how many housing units they can get in a particular area.
Thank you.
Well, for what I think is part of the ADU review process is you make sure you approve an ADU where the carrying capacity is acceptable. So let's say it's a single-family home. They have a garage. They want to put in an ADU, and it's a single-family, one-vehicle home. They have a two-car garage. They have a two-car a driveway. That would be an acceptable approval for an ADU because that can handle the carrying capacity. You may not want to approve ADUs where they cannot handle the carrying capacity. The other thing is we also have to do, although the legislature has authorized the multi-unit development without providing for parking, we can say, no, that is not acceptable. If we're going to build a multi-unit, you have to have the parking capacity for it so that the streets don't get filled. Because people are going to have their cars. If there's public transportation, people can still have their cars, one way or another. So it has to be dealt with. It has to be addressed. I also propose a parking plan for, which I cannot get to now. Thank you.
So parking is pretty important, particularly when you don't have it and when you have to circle around and around to find a space just to park close to your house. So I get that concern. I think homeowners have an obligation to be sensitive to your neighbors if you're going to put something in, if you're going to increase density within a neighborhood. Be sensitive to the burden that might put on adjacent neighbors, and parking, it can be considered one of those burdens. So perhaps if you do have a parking issue in your neighborhood, you provide an on-site space, or you rent to someone that has a single car or a bike. So there are things that can be done to kind of help mitigate the issues.
Yes, Beth. I collected questions via email. This question did not come from me. In the email. The Bozeman Community Center on the west side with the pools and the library services has many supporters. Where do you stand on this project? Do you want to repeat it?
Yes,
Bozeman.
The Bozeman Community Center on the west side with pools and library services has many supporters. Where do you stand on this project?
Go for it.
Okay, so I am all about recreation. I grew up in a gym. I grew up swimming. These centers in our community are so important. When I, as a commissioner, looked at what we were having to approve, I think it was $100 per $100,000 worth of value on a home per year. It was too expensive for me to support. I talked to a lot of my friends and neighbors. I could not find people who wanted to support that kind of financial obligation. We have to work to get the cost down. We're seeing other communities with similar sorts of measures reach out, get philanthropy, and just, you know, look at downsizing that facility to make it more affordable.
If I remember correctly, the issue was put to the voters, and the voters said no. So, no. I do recall it being...
Never voted against the library, yeah. Ever.
Okay. Then I stand corrected. I stand corrected.
Yeah, maybe a memo. We were going to put it on the ballot.
I stand corrected.
And then
corrected.
It came off the ballot.
Okay.
Correct?
I thought it was put on the ballot. It was voted against. I stand corrected. My mistake. I believe that's something that should be put to the ballot. Let the voters, who are the taxpaying residents of Bozeman, decide whether they want the facility or not. And if the votes are for the facility, then we should figure out a way to make it happen. And if the votes are against the facility, then the people have spoken. Thank you.
I remember seeing the $100 million price tag and having a spit take. I couldn't believe that we were about to see on the ballot $100 million for amenities that I'm never hearing people concerned about. We've knocked 12,000 doors this week. I almost never hear somebody say the first thing at the top of their mind is we need a new community center, we need new recreation facilities. And in my time of being in this community, whenever we're asking for, you know, subsidies for affordable housing or any of the ideas that we've talked about up here, like improving our public transportation, our water plans, housing, land banking, there's always the response, we don't have the money. And then suddenly there's $100 million that they want to ask from the voters to pay for something that is not an essential component of what we need right now. I want to make sure that gets flipped a bit. I think if we're going to ask the voters for a $100 million project, we go and raise, as the city, half of it before going to the voters. We work with philanthropists, with investors that are willing to take a loss to get that 50% first.
Yes. Dan.
My son, one of my four-year-old sons, fell the other day and jammed his hand pretty hard in the ground. And a few days later, it was still black. And then the skin started peeling off his thumb, like all the skin was sloughing off his thumb. And my wife and I talked about what do we do. And I'm thinking to myself, shit, we don't have the money to cover the hospital bill. Let's give another day, and hopefully this will get better. And so I cannot, as a working young professional of the family, I cannot stomach the idea of paying for more things that we just can't afford. Even if it's 50% less, we're living pretty close to the bone right now. And we don't want to move. And so to the extent that we can stay in Bozeman, I think we should.
So we don't just put something on the ballot because the commission sits around and thinks, what should we put on a ballot? We put things on a ballot for folks like you to vote on. And we put it on the ballot because we've heard from folks like you, this is what we want. When I first started on the commission knocking on doors 13 years ago, you know what I was hearing about all the time? A swimming pool. We need a new swimming pool. We have had plans and talked about a library on the west side for years. The one piece that I think is debatable and we could maybe think a little bit more about is the recreational part of that center. But it's not. It will be something that comes to you. We took it off because of the uncertainty around property taxes, and we weren't sure how that was all going to play out. But folks, it's going to cost a lot of money to build a community center, and if you want it, you can vote for it, and if you don't want it, you don't have to vote for it.
And the gentleman in the back.
The Montana Public Service Commission just approved the highest rate hike for electricity rates ever in Montana history, 28%. Given the real chance for more rate hikes in the future, what will you do as mayor to stand up for ratepayers to make sure that our cost of living stays affordable here?
Yeah, one of the only ways that we can threaten Northwestern Energy and squeeze them to actually come to the negotiating table is to threaten them with taking away ratepayers. I think that goes back to my introduction, my top priorities of trying to win EPA money, building like more incentives for solar panels, getting more people off the grid, solar and wind turbine gardens in neighborhoods that allow entire neighborhoods to get off of the grid. That starts to say to Northwestern Energy, we're just going to keep taking ratepayers away from you if you will not come to the negotiating table with us. To me, negotiating with Northwestern Energy addresses sort of the twin crises that we're seeing right now, which is one, being able to meet our climate action goals, making sure that they come to the negotiating table for green tariffs, for all these things that we know that are essential to meeting our carbon neutrality goals, as well as the growing income inequality in this community, in our country, that is crushing the working class, that is crushing the middle class. And to me, Northwestern Energy sits right in the crux of both of those concerns. And I think it's really important that we can make sure that Northwestern Energy feels threatened by the City Commission.
Thanks. We are working with Northwestern Energy on a green tariff. For those of you that don't know what that is, it's just being able to bundle recycled energy and paying a little bit more for it. I don't think that you get very much, you don't gain very much by threatening somebody. I think you have to be able to work with them. You have to be able to collaborate. You have to be able to come to the table and talk. Believe me, in my 13 years on this commission, we have been working with Northwestern Energy, and we are making progress. We are making some good progress, folks, and it's taken a lot of time, and we'll continue to fight and to work with them. But to demand things and to use a tactic that threatens them, I don't think that gets us very far. And I'm committed committed to continue working with them, to continue with this MOU around the green tariff, which, by the way, we are working with Missoula as well, so it's Missoula, Bozeman, and Northwestern Energy to be able to bring those energy costs down.
I was reading a daily reflection today, and they said there's a time to say no and a time to say yes. And if you always say yes, that's a weakness. If you always say no, that's a weakness as well. And I think that now is a good time for us to say no. It's not okay for you to raise the rates on us. It's not okay for the Montana legislature to say, you can't require new developments to have solar panels. I like Joey's idea of getting people tax incentives for solar panels, but we can't require that as a city right now because the Montana legislature passed a statute saying we can't do that. And so Article 9, Section 1 of the Montana Constitution and Article 2, Section 3 of the Montana Constitution provides every Montana resident with the right to a clean and healthful environment. I think the city should stand up for its residents and challenge these bad laws that prevent us from increasing our solar capacity. That's one way to get after Northwestern Energy.
Who would like you?
I agree that we need to continue, as frustrating as it is, working with Northwest Energy. I also think that we need to look at the Public Service Commission. We need people on that commission who represent us. What is wrong with that? People in this room, think about running. We need to change the makeup of that commission. We also need to do our best to incentivize things like solar, have more solar in our community, greater efficiencies, whether it's weatherproofing, homes that have greater insulation, like the Bridgerview homes. Make our homes tighter to begin with so people don't have to use as much energy to begin with.
Thank you. Well, first, I agree with Commissioner Magic that the Public Service Commission should be representing us, and we certainly need our representation on the commission. But also, look, the cost of energy, it is an issue, and part of it is energy capacity. I am all for efficiency. I like solar. I like wind. But the reality is that they cannot fulfill our energy needs. We have to have all of the above. We're going to have to keep fossil fuels, whether we like it or not. That is the reality of our situation. It doesn't mean that we don't build alternate avenues of energy source. It doesn't mean that we don't move for efficiency. But the reality is we've got to have an energy policy that includes all of the above, and we also need to be represented in our voice on the commission. Thank you.
That gentleman, and then next you, okay?
Thank you. We really need affordable housing in Bozeman, but I think we can all agree the last round of upzoning density in downtown did not provide more affordable housing, but did create a lot of energy.
What is your question?
Excuse me.
Sorry.
I have five sentences. If it didn't work last time, how will the same proposal this time to increase density from R2 and 3 and 4 to R8 in historic neighborhoods create affordable housing this time if it didn't work the last time?
Well, for one thing, I would say that this is your opportunity to have new leadership implementing the policies that represent your interests. I don't support the development that occurred downtown in the historic district. The historic district should be preserved. Additionally, variances were given to the developers who developed some of that property not to have parking spaces. And as a result, there is now going to be an increased issue of parking downtown. Development with the new UDC, development should be appropriately placed not only in type of development, but also location. So I think that is vital to the AD the UDC process, that it be appropriate for the area. We should preserve the historic district. We should preserve the single-family districts, but we should also open various types of capacity outside of those areas. Thank you. And I think that will allow the capacity to generate.
So we have not approved anything. We have some proposals out there, but one of the reasons that we're backing up the bus on the UDC is to get more input from all of you. We do not control what kind of development is built in terms of how much it costs. We control what is built where, and if it meets that criteria, the developer gets to build it. We do have a project, the old fire station, you might recall, that is going to provide us with affordable housing. How did that happen? The developer needed a few things, and so including parking and some gap financing, so we were able to use TIF dollars, tax increment finance money, to help him with that. In turn, we were able to get affordable housing. Those are the kinds of things that work, working with developers and helping them get what they need, as well as helping us get affordable housing.
I thought I just heard the mayor say that if somebody puts together a proposal and it checks all the boxes, that the city commission has to approve that. And that is not correct. Right now, we have an affordable housing crisis. The UDC revisions are not going to help that crisis at all. They do not require affordable housing to be built. Again, the city says we have an affordable housing crisis, and because of that finding, we are no longer going to approve luxury houses, which are allowed by the UDC. The UDC allows the developer to come in, scrape a house, build an eightplex luxury apartment, and that's only going to exacerbate the cost of living. It's going to raise taxes on everybody. It's going to ruin the town even more. We have to say no to the UDC revisions.
So actually, if a developer does check every box and we say no to it, they sue us, and then we pay for it. We pay for their own project. That's what that plays out as. I think it is important, and this is something that Raja brought up, there are departures that are given to developers that do not have to be given. We do not have to negotiate with them in the way that we have been for a very long time. At the core, I don't really see how the UDC could just generate more affordable housing as it currently stands or as it's revised. To me, I think it's important for us to figure out what are the things that are helpful in the proposals and what are problematic. And making sure, I just don't understand why it makes sense for us to upzone the entire community in one fell swoop rather than allowing our community to have the input and go neighborhood by neighborhood and be able to upzone where people feel like it makes sense, where it can be established, where we have the infrastructure to support it. Upzoning the entire community all in one go just doesn't make any sense to me, and I'm completely opposed to that idea. I think it's important for us to be able to work hard and work smart and create the housing that we need in this community, but just saying no is really not an option.
Thanks. I think you have to be really careful with any upzoning. I have voted to deny a number of upzone requests. I am doing everything I can to try to keep our existing housing stock, particularly in our historic districts. We should not be leveling neighborhoods and carting off homes and neighborhoods to our landfill. We need to try to keep people in their homes as long as possible, and to be able to add maybe a little bit of incremental density to places. We've talked about ADUs. That's a way to add incremental density. There are other ways to add what I've heard called invisible density and so forth. But try to keep people in their homes as long as possible requires a sensitive code that doesn't rely on upzoning and relies on things like zone edge transitions.
Just as a comment on the side, I'm sorry to be such a stinker about people's questions, but you all came out, you know, not to hear one another, but to hear what people have to say. Yes, and then you next.
The most sustainable city on Earth is Chernobyl, after Soviet communist nuclear. So what's your plans for people who know physics and biology and disagree with your vision of sustainable or smart city?
Did you understand the question?
Repeat
it.
Did everybody hear that?
What are your plans to people? What do you plan to do with people?
What do you plan to do with people?
Who know physics and biology and disagree with your views
of
sustainable or smart cities.
Sustainable or smart?
Smart cities.
Smart cities. Thank you, ma'am.
First of all, I'm an attorney. My brother is actually a biophysicist. I call him up when I have those type of questions. So briefly, I stay in my lane. I don't pretend to be a physicist. I kind of understand some of the generalities. But the reality is, as a representative of a view, I would bring in an expert who can explain to me either, A, why I'm wrong, in which case I will then have to make adjustments accordingly, or B, how I'm right, but my proposed implementation is wrong, and what he will then educate me on how to implement it properly. So I think to answer your, and I hope that answered your question, in that I understand my limitations, and I will reach out to experts to aid me with those limitations. Thank you.
Ma'am, I'm going to stop you.
So let's keep going on the one question that we have.
We're moving on.
Yeah, I'm not sure I entirely got the question, but playing off of smart cities, what I like to talk about more is sustainable, healthy communities, developing a community that looks at streets and develops streets that are safe so we can walk and ride our bikes and not rely on cars, develop housing and a housing stock that is adds housing that is open and available to everyone who needs it, to a variety of housing types. A healthy city, a sustainable city, looks at the natural environment, make sure that we're taking care of the plants, the trees, the creeks, the air quality, the water, and so forth. So I think about sustainable cities and ways that we can do it and trying to make sure that we're meeting our goals out of all the plans, growth policy, climate action plan.
What I heard from your question was, what do you do when when people disagree with you? And I would do what I always do. I would listen to what you had to say. And when it came to making a decision, when it came for me to make a decision, I would take your points into consideration, as I do with anybody who disagrees with me, consider them as I go forward and make my decision. There's a lot of things that people don't agree on in our community. They don't agree with decisions that have been made in the commission, but that doesn't mean we aren't hearing you, that we're not considering your point of view as we move forward to make our decision. So that's what I would do.
On Wednesday, in a few days from now, I'm going to be speaking at Montana State University on a panel. It's called Careers in Climate. I'm going to be sitting next to a NASA scientist on one side and a climate change photographer on the other. And I'm going to tell the students that climate change is not the problem. Climate change is a symptom. The real problem is overconsumption. Our planet, our city cannot continue to consume the resources that we're consuming at the rate we're consuming right now. So if we want a really sustainable town, if we want a really sustainable planet, we need to slow down on consumption. And for me, that first starts with saying no to unnecessary vacation houses. That's the very first thing. And if there's an expert who disagrees, I'm all ears.
I feel like I've still misunderstood the question necessarily. But to me, a good commission is only as good as the experts that it surrounds itself with. It's essential for us to be able to build relationships with experts in this community and listen to what they tell us. If we have citizen advisory boards full of experts that are giving proposals and recommendations, to me, I would lean on the expertise of those boards. But if there are biologists and physicists that come together and they say, you know, sustainable infrastructure isn't going to meet our goals, I would maybe be a little confused and I'd want to try to get a second opinion, because we know that sustainable infrastructure is a critical component to us being able to address any of these. I don't know if that still might have dithered around your question specifically, but to me it's just essential that sustainability and our climate goals are incorporated into absolutely every single decision that is being made by City Hall, because it is the most pressing issue that does incorporate into every single thing that the city touches.
Oh my goodness. Nobody has a question. The gentleman back there and then in the front row. Oh, did I lied. I'm so sorry. I'm a bad moderator.
Each one of you has talked about community engagement. This is a representation of some of the community members, but it's not everyone. How will you increase the quantity and quality of community engagement with limited taxpayer dollars?
How will you expand the engagement of the community with limited tax dollars? Is that correct? Sure. There you go.
Well, should I be lucky enough to be elected, I will hold a monthly community meeting on my dime. Because ultimately, if I am elected, I work for you. I am your representative. Whatever I do is to represent your interests. If there is, I will keep you updated on a monthly basis. I will have an open door policy. You'll be able to reach me on my phone. You'll be able to walk into my office. You'll be able to meet with me once a month at my monthly meetings. And I will meet with you before any significant vote is taken, because that vote is not my vote. That vote is your vote. Thank you.
Next.
Jen's got it.
Oh, okay. Community planner's got to answer this question. So really good question, because I think we need to improve our level of community engagement. Community engagement is not just showing up at city commission meetings or at citizen advisory board meetings. That's not good community dialogue. We need to have, I think, more informal meetings. My door has always been open. I meet with a variety of people. If you call and ask me, I'm there. But I love the idea of regular meetings, and I do think that the commission should establish, and I have talked to some of my fellow commissioners about this, kind of a monthly revolving commission open hours. And I think we need to make ourselves available in informal ways like that.
Right now, it sort of feels like some of the only ways that we can have our voices heard is to write angry letters to the editor or to scream into the void on Facebook or Nextdoor. And that's holding us back from being able to really engage together. To me, right now, one of the things that I feel is that you basically have to be friends or neighbors with someone in the city commission to be able to have your voice heard and to be able to have your pulse on what's happening in the community. And that's an unacceptable level of community engagement. To me, if you want to have real community engagement, elect someone who's been doing it on the campaign trail. 12,000 doors, hundreds of volunteers. We've sent letters to 13,000 people. That costs like $3,500. If I'm in City Hall, we can do that every single quarter to let you know, here's what might happen in the next 3 months, the next 6 months, the next 5 years. To me, that's an essential part. Right now, it's unacceptable to me that most of the time when you go hear from the city, you're hearing from city staff who are not your elected representatives. They're doing a great job, but the city commission needs to be accompanying them in lockstep and supporting them every step of the way.
So one of the things I think I learned from our last go-around with community engagement regarding the UDC was that we definitely missed the step somewhere. And, you know, I think about it like, oh, we're going to have a meeting on the UDC, and people ask, what's the UDC? And then they have, like, I got to take my kid to soccer, and I've got to go grocery shopping, and I have to do this, and I'm not going to go to the UDC meeting, whatever that is. And then the next time you hear, oh, we're going to have another meeting on the UDC, but we're going to talk about your neighborhood, maybe you should come, and you have the same issues, right? You've got things that are more important. And then one day you hear, we're going to build an apex next to your house. And you're like, holy cow, I better get to that meeting. But I guess what I learned is that we need to go where you guys are, not always have you guys come to us. So it's great you're all here at the library, but I think going forward we need to be meeting maybe at your school or maybe at your church or somewhere in your community where we can meet in small groups and have some courageous conversations, hear each other and talk. That's what I think we need to be doing going forward to have more community engagement.
This is a little bit uncomfortable to say, but I'm going to say it anyways. I heard that there's been a pause on the UDC, and then I also hear people talk to people saying they're moving forward behind the scenes with select groups of people. And so there's a lot of people in town that feel disenfranchised. I think we all agree on that point. And I think one thing the city can do is create a liaison for the city. So maybe several liaisons. So every neighborhood has its own individual liaison. So that once a week or once a month or whenever, city neighborhood members can get together, talk about the issues that are important to them, and then they can work with that city liaison to bring that back to the city commissioners. That's one way I think that a grassroots true democracy could work.
Now, I don't know where I was. Some gentleman in the back, right there.
Sir, in the follow up on a couple of questions back, just would like to hear the answers on the comment about if a proposed development checks the boxes, can the commission not approve it?
Does the commission have to approve a development if it checks all the boxes?
Really, no. I mean, if a development meets zoning, meets building code, meets everything, we can't really say no. In fact, very often it does not come to the city commission. It's approved administratively. So there are many things that happen in this community that don't come to the city commission. They're already allowed by current zoning. And so I think it's really important to understand, particularly as we go through the UDC process, is what is currently allowed by right? You know, what can you do? And that's important to know because it's predictability for you as a homeowner, landowner. And it's predictability not only what you can do with your own land, but what your neighbor does. And then look at the codes as it changes and see what that's going to do to your property, to your neighbor's property, and so forth.
As Commissioner Magic just said, there is a limitation on the city commission's right if a developer checks all the boxes, which is why it is so important that the new UDC be done right, because that's the roadmap going forward. That is Bozeman's future. And if we don't get that right, then everything that we don't like now will continue, and it'll be worse. So it's vital that the UDC be done right and that it be done and represent all of your values. Thank you.
I want to just say that I agree with Commissioner Magic, but the City Commission is not up there rubber stamping things. We can say no. There's criteria that have to be met with every single project. One of those big criteria is, does it meet the growth policy? And that's often the place where we have discussion about, yes, it does, or no, it doesn't. So it's not always as black and white as it may seem. It's very difficult to make findings in the negative. It's not to say that it can't happen. I did that on Black and Olive, actually. But it's rare. And it does set us up for a lawsuit if you don't state your criteria and state all the reasons why you are voting against something. But 99% of the time, it's very difficult to do.
Yeah, the effectively what's been said is correct. Yeah, that there are only some circumstances where I've seen a development just fully said no, can't do it, nice try, go back to the drawing board, which is a helpful tactic. To be able to tell a developer, like, nope, and cost them money because it costs time, et cetera. But also, this fact is part of what underpins why the UDC changes were coming out. Actually, all across the country, there are cities that are recognizing the same thing, that we don't have very many tools to tell a developer what they can and cannot build. We don't have a whole lot of tools to tell them to build something that we want in the places that we want to. And so a lot of cities across the country have gone back to say, well, let's look at our rules. Can we change our zoning rules to narrow what can and can't be built in certain areas? Our current proposals don't seem to really do that, but that is sort of some of the impetus that leads to let's figure out what are the tools that we can manipulate, since we can't just tell developers no all the time. We can, however, start to tell them no when they ask for things, when they ask for departures around parking or around lot sizes or around setbacks and things like that. We don't have to play ball with them every single time, but effectively, no.
I would respectfully disagree with everyone who just spoke. When I was going to law school in San Francisco, I went for one semester, and there was a land use attorney who won a case in the Ninth Circuit. He put a moratorium in place on development in the Sierras. And the city council has not only the ability but the obligation protect the health, the safety, and the welfare of all of us. That is the duty of every city commissioner, to protect Bozeman residents. And so if the Bozeman City Commission makes a finding saying the laws are being passed by the Montana legislature that prevent inclusionary zoning, that allow whatever is bad for us, if those things are putting us into a crisis, the city commission, we can make findings and then say, we are going to place a pause on development. We can pause unaffordable housing. We can pause luxury housing. That is the obligation of the city, and that is what I'm saying we should do. Now, that's been upheld for a year and a half in the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Montana law says we can do that for up to 2.5 years.
Thank you. Yes, right there in the front row.
We lost a considerable amount of affordable housing when we tore down all of the mobile home parks to build the things that have been...
We lost... I'm going to repeat you so everybody can hear. We lost a lot of affordable housing when we tore down the some of the
mobile home parks.
Have
manufactured homes been any part of your discussion on affordable housing?
Have manufactured homes been any part of your discussion about affordable housing?
Jen perked up first, I think.
a little bit, but I think they should be part of our discussion more. They're such a great way to provide an individual unit for someone. They can be cheaper. They can be mobile. I think a number of us who have lived in this community long enough have seen our manufactured mobile home parks leave. We had one on Bridger Drive. We've had one on the northeast side. And with each one, we're losing housing for our working class. We're losing our lowest income housing. And so I think that is a very good question. Not only how do we keep the mobile home parks that we have, because we still have a number of them in our community, and I think they're like an endangered species. How do we keep them? How do we develop more?
I'm 100% believer in manufactured homes. The technology today, you can literally have a home, an 18-wheeler can bring a home into a lot, put it down, and that back part of the 18-wheeler is a home that is insulated against the cold. You just hook it up to the water and sewage, and you've got a small house. I'm a big fan of them. I think they should be considered as part of the city's plan going forward. Thank you.
I think we have had conversations about manufactured homes, but the problem is that the price of land is so high that it doesn't always pencil to be able to put them there. I think tiny homes, tiny villages are a better idea and a way to build a home that is more sustainable, that is more energy efficient. And I think, again, the price of land in our community is so high that it doesn't always pencil to be able to have manufactured homes.
I think this is an all-of-the-above approach. Anything we can do to get people housed, I think we should move forward with. I think that I agree with Mayor Andrews that the cost of land is very expensive. I think the city owns land, and maybe we can bring some mobile homes on the land the city owns, give some discounts for paying rent or things like that. I think we need to be very creative in our options.
To the first piece, well, yes. Prefabricated homes are awesome. Being able to create tiny home villages with prefabricated homes, very exciting. We actually have some great prefabricated homes in town built by this really interesting company called Collective Carpentry. I believe they're in British Columbia. Very, very cool organization, very cool business. But to the point of losing them, that's what I want to focus on for a second. This is certainly on the county's mind. If you talk with any of the county commissioners, it is certainly on their mind. Because many of these, of our mobile home parks, within the limits of the city are actually on little county islands. They are so important, and they are so constantly threatened by speculative home buyers, by speculative investors who just see that land and just want to bulldoze it and kick out everybody there. And we see it all across the country. And it really takes a deep and strong partnership between the city and county for us to be able to wield all the resources we have together to keep them from being bought up and bulldozed and turned into some sort of luxury entity.
Hey, the woman standing in the against the window, and then the woman in the striped shirt, okay?
Specifically, I'd like to hear from you what your plan is to swiftly move urban camping out of Bozeman.
What's your plan for moving camping out of Bozeman?
Urban camping.
Okay. Can I address that?
Sure.
Thank you for the question. It's a question near and dear to my heart. I decided to run for commissioner because I did not feel that the city administration was responsive to that specific issue in my neighborhood. I look out my bedroom door, and I see 20 campers right outside my window. If I go around the block, there are, I believe, 15 more. I've dealt with generators going day and night. I've not been able to enjoy my community because of the urban campers. Now, the city, the administration's position by, I believe, a wrong interpretation of the law of the city attorney is that they're constrained by two Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decisions. And that simply is not accurate. And the reason it's not accurate is that decision applies to indigent. You cannot criminalize indigent people. If you don't have 2 cents to rub together and living on the street, that person shouldn't be a criminal. But the urban campers are not indigent. They've got satellite TV. They order takeout. They've got late model cars.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I'll answer a question after. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. Super important. I have not been able to enjoy my community thinking about the people who are not living in homes, particularly as the weather drops. I worry about people living on the streets. It's not right. I've worried about the impact on businesses. I mean, it is a big problem. And quite honestly, we are doing the best we can given some of the resources we have. We need a full-time shelter, 24/7 shelter. One is being built. We need adequate transitional housing. Family Promise has a great campus on South 19th being developed. We need more manufactured housing. We need more housing options. I think all of these things are in the works, and I love the idea that someday we're not going to have urban camping and everyone is going to have a home that they can actually go home to.
Sure.
I sometimes bristle when we talk about urban camping as if it's separate from homelessness. It's homelessness, plain and simple. These are folks that live and work in our community. They have been priced out of housing that many of them previously had. And it does a disservice to just distinguish them as like a separate category of homelessness. Homelessness is not new to Bozeman. Some people identify this as like coming in the last 2 or 3 years. Homelessness has been here for a while. But communities have effectively an ability to like absorb a certain amount of homelessness before we see it all the time. We need to make sure fortunately, there's a lot of just actually really solid data on how to address homelessness in communities. We know the things that will work. Fines and penalties do not work, but designating public use areas that are allowed for them to use in the interim while we build the housing and rapid rehousing and transitional housing infrastructure that HRDC has been building for the last several years, those are the things that get people off of the street in the most sustainable, ethical, and economical way.
I think it's important to recognize that not everybody who's urban camping is the same. There are people who live here, who work here, who are living in their cars. We need to support those people as much as we can. There are people who are transient, who are vagabonds, who are causing crime, screwing up our business, human waste everywhere, and we don't need those people in our community. I don't think that we should be supporting those people. I am saying we need to go from a 30-day period to a 10-day period. If you don't live here, if you don't work here, you can stay here for 10 days, and then we're going to ensure that you start moving your car out of the way. And I don't say that lightly because when I was in law school, I couldn't find a place to live in San Francisco. So I lived in the back of my truck with my dog for 30 days in Golden Gate Park trying to scrape by. I've lived south of Bozeman in South Cottonwood Canyon for more than 5 years without running water and electricity. So I understand what it's like to be cold and all that good stuff. But I think we also need to show some tough love to people because we can't just let people take advantage of our town.
I think we did the right thing. It took us some time. We developed an ordinance that complies with what the Ninth Circuit said we can do, which complies with the laws of the state. It is in alignment with other states around the United States. These people are members of our community.
Some of them really have hardships. They don't have a job, or they have trouble keeping a job. They have kids in school. They have nowhere to go. And the ordinance that we passed shows compassion for them. It also is a balance in terms of the how they affect our businesses. You can't now any longer park within 100 feet of a school or a daycare or a business. So I think we did the right thing. I don't think we could just load people up on a bus and kick them out of town. That's not a humane thing to do. And I recognize that not everybody is happy about it. It's a first step. We have two resource folks that are going to be coming online that are going to help these people find work and other services.
Somebody in a striped shirt. That's you.
So earlier we had a lot of talk about solar, and I think going forward our climate goals, that's important, right? So with the UDC proposing drastically taller and more massive buildings, are you willing to codify solar protections for both passive and active solar energy generation?
I hope everybody heard that, because I can't say all that again. Who would like to talk about this first? Okay, there you go.
Thanks for the question, Allison. And like I said before, when you asked a question, I'm willing to consider it, for sure. But the devil is in the details, and until we really look at what that means, I can't stand up here and say I'm absolutely going to commit to that. But I'm certainly willing and open to listen, to understand it better, and to see the impacts that it has on the community.
I think that we need to scrap the UDC. I think that the mayor should agree to wait until the next mayor is in office before they move forward on voting on it. I think that we did that already.
That's what happened.
Okay. Did we vote on the next mayor not voting to replace Commissioner Pomeroy until the next mayor's? I'm asking everyone. Should we allow the next mayor to have a vote on who replaces Commissioner Pomeroy?
Not an audience participation event.
And what was the question? What'd you ask?
So, okay, I asked, there's been lots of talk about solar tonight. Yeah. With the UDC proposing drastically taller and more massive buildings, are you willing to codify solar protections both for passive and active solar energy generation?
As an environmental attorney, yes, absolutely. We should redo the entire UDC provision, have community buy-in, and make that a center point. That we don't want luxury, unaffordable housing in Bozeman anymore, and we want solar, active and passive.
Who wants to talk next? There you go.
Well, first I want to address your question regarding the higher, more massive buildings in the UDC. I don't support that. I don't think they're consistent with our environment. I don't believe they're consistent with the personality of Bozeman. Now, whatever we build, whether it be a single-family home or a new office building, we should go for maximum energy efficiency. We should go for maximum independence from the grid to the degree possible. Thank you.
So, really good question. And one of the root basis of zoning back in the early 1900s was the impact of a building on an adjacent neighborhood, whether it's a pig farm next door to your house or a building that is so tall that all of a sudden it's cutting off light and air from your house. So absolutely, zoning needs to play a role on the impact of new development on adjacent properties and anything we can do. Particularly, we've talked just briefly about those zone edge transitions to soften the blow or soften and mitigate the impact of a taller building on adjacent building. I would note that our current code allows some tall buildings too. So let's be careful when we talk about scrapping the new code when the current code might be problematic and need change.
Who has Joey?
Yeah, I mean, I think not only solar panels, should be considered, right? There's a lot of things to consider when building a significantly larger or taller structure next to any existing structure that goes beyond the need to protect access to light for energy generation, that goes as far as, you know, protecting the ability for folks to have urban gardens, to promote, you know, food autonomy. Like, there's a lot of things that can be incorporated that I think the short answer is yes. I think that is something that should be considered whenever proposals are going forward. And I'm not sure exactly what the right way is to give it that teeth to make sure that that can be protected. We might be done.
Okay, are we all exhausted? So that was the last question. I'm sorry. It's the last question. The time's gone. That's why I bug everybody. So everybody has 2 minutes to tell you one more time why you ought to vote for them. And I also want to thank all you candidates for coming, for running for office. You know, it's exhausting. And bless you all for this. Who would like to be first?
I'll go first.
Okay, 2 minutes.
First, I want to thank you all for coming out and listening to myself, and I'll take the liberty to speak for everybody else, all of us here. I want to thank the League of Women Voters for putting on this forum, and I just want to let you know my campaign is endorsed by Bobcat and NFL veteran Dane Fletcher. I offer you solutions. You've heard some of what I've had to say. I'm going to stick around after. Feel free to come up to me, ask me any questions you'd like. I will answer them, whether it's an expansion of what I already set up here or something new. I'm available because ultimately my goal is to represent you on the commission. I want to offer solutions, an independent and new perspective, and to be your representative. And every vote that I take will be a vote that will represent you. And every the equation that will go into it is, how does this make Bozeman better? Thank you.
I'd also like to thank the League of Women Voters, really nicely run forum, and thank all of you for showing up tonight. This is a great crowd. This is our fifth forum, and they've all been really well attended. And that speaks well, I think, of our community. We're a community who cares. We're a community who wants to participate. I look around this room and I see 20 years of people that I've known and new friends and so forth. And that's the way it should be. And we should all be working together. Back to kind of my three priorities of conservation, housing, and community. That community part really is the most important part. Because if we want to achieve some of our goals, whether there are housing goals, our conservation goals, trying to get an urban tree ordinance in place or whatever it happens to be in the next couple of years, we need to work together as a community. These issues are too big for any one of us to tackle. And the commission, quite honestly, and our boards, I'll go back to say that we need help. I am open to listening, always have been, love to hear new ideas. And I would like to just end by thanking my fellow panelists. I really have been proud, particularly of the candidates running for mayor. It's a diverse group. That is not an easy job. You don't see me running for that spot. No way. I'm done. I'm happy with commissioner. But I'm really happy to see the diversity of the folks who are running. I like them all. We should all like them all. And I'm going to end on that good note. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Who next?
Who's feeling it? I'm up.
Yeah. Go.
This was like a pretty fun forum. It was interesting to have all audience questions, nothing that we could prepare, and only a minute. Really quick on your feet answers. Yeah, again, my name is Joy Morrison. I'm running for mayor because, to me, City Hall has felt pretty out of touch from the lived experience of most of us in this community. And I'm running to be able to represent and fight for the working people, the people that have been left behind, the people who don't see themselves represented in City Hall. To me, the most important thing for us to get into any elected office, that's not just for our City Hall, it's also for our elected representatives that go to Helena, is to elect people who are conveners. People who can break bread, people who can bring humility, who can bring pragmatism, who can sit down across from people who they disagree with. I spend the overwhelming majority of my time talking to people who I disagree with. When my canvassers are out and there's an evening that I'm not out with them and they run into somebody who's really has tough questions for me, I tell them to give them my phone number so they can give me a call. That is how I spend a lot of my time, is actually talking to the people who had questions that were too tough for my canvassers to answer. And I sit down and I get coffee with them. Maybe they say bad things to me. But by the end, we leave with some agreement. To me, that is actually what makes Montana, Montana. That is the Montana that I grew up in, a Montana that we come together, we disagree, but we can break bread and we can find common solutions together. Because at the end of the day, if we don't work together, the status quo gets sustained. Every time we get divided between whether how long we've lived here, how much money we make, whether we're a renter or a homeowner, whether we're blue or red, all we do is benefit the status quo that is not working for most of us. So to me, it's important for us to elect someone who not only has the skills and the track record to convene people who have disparate interests, but someone who actually just straight up loves it. I love doing it. It is how I fill my time. I've sat down with a lot of people who I didn't think I'd have agreements with, and we walked away with a lot of shared camaraderie, a lot of excitement about where this community can go. And that's why I'm asking for your vote, so we can build a better Bozeman together.
Whoever.
Who wants the last word?
I get the last word.
Hold the applause. I told you that I'm the first person in my family to graduate from college. My mom was the first woman to cut slabs of steel at a mill in Northwest Indiana. I was invited earlier this year to go talk at UC Berkeley's Law School about my Clean Water Act work. At the hotel, there was a photo of the Golden Gate Bridge. And on that photo was a plaque of the Golden Gate Bridge, and it said, "This steel is made from Bethlehem steel." And that's where my mother worked. For 20 years, she cut slabs of steel with a torch. And so I promise you, as the first person in my family to graduate from college, as a blue-collar worker, as a community organizer, as a successful attorney, I will give everything I can to protect Bozeman right now. I'm all for talking to people, but I'm not for breaking bread with developers right now. Right now, our city has been taken hostage by developers, and we need to get the power back. We need to say no more. You don't run our town anymore. We're going to protect ourselves. Once we do that, by all means, let's sit down. Montana legislators, developers, everybody, let's all get together and talk about what we want to see in the future. But right now, we don't have any say. And we have got to get the power back. We have got to take Bozeman back. That's why I'm here, because I want to build a really, truly sustainable Bozeman. And when I see new high-rise buildings going up around town that have vacation houses and condos and stuff, that's not sustainable. It's just not sustainable. I want my kids to grow up in a good town. I want them to grow up in a good place. That's why I'm here. I would really appreciate your vote in the next week.
To your right.
Well, thanks, everybody, for coming out tonight. I have served you and this community for 13 years alongside a really dedicated team, and we have made some great strides, I think, over the last 13 years, including working through a city that is experiencing tremendous growth, working through a pandemic, and working through a state government that continues to preempt us from doing a lot of things that help us keep us from moving forward. Bozeman is a community that's in transition, and I believe that I have the experience and the relationships that I have built over the last 13 years to move us forward, to help us with the transition that we're going through from a small city to a larger city. I want to continue working for this community. I love the community, I love the work I do, and I believe that I have the experience and the expertise to continue moving us forward. I hope that you'll consider voting for me in this next election. And thanks again for coming out tonight.
Thank you. Thank you to the... Just wait 1 second. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. I think it's great that this community is so keen on paying attention and getting out there and having our voice heard. And thank you, and bless you guys for running. I don't know, you know, that would be way too hard. Now, clap! Yay!
That wraps up this candidate forum that was recorded at the Bozeman Public Library on the evening of Monday, October 30th, 2023.